North Carolina's Urban Talk Station.
Power 750 WAUG.
Good morning and welcome to this special Plain Talk Politics on this Monday morning. I hope you're all doing well. I'm Jeannie Bonds and this is Plain Talk about the people, the process, and the facts so you can make an informed decision. The show we're going to do today is about clean air. We all need air and we're all into environmental issues and we've got a great panel to have a discussion this morning. I'm going to start with asking each of them to introduce themselves and their organizations. Let's start with Jen.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Renix and I am with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I am based in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains here in western North Carolina. My organization works regionally throughout the Southeast, including North Carolina, on a range of climate and energy issues, in particular looking at how we produce, consume, and use energy and how that impacts our environment and our public health and jobs. So good morning, and thank you for having us on.
Good morning, Jen. Luis?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. My name is Luis Martinez. I work for the Natural Resources Defense Council. I also am based out of Western North Carolina. And NRDC is a national, international, not-for-profit. We work on all environmental issues. We're headquartered in New York, but also have offices in Chicago, in D.C., in California, in Montana, and in Beijing. And very happy to be here.
Great. Thank you, Luis. Richard?
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me to this discussion. I'm a retired emergency physician, has worked in Winston-Salem and in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. I've also been with Interfaith Power and Light, a national and state organization, for about 8 years, doing public policy work on energy and climate change. Now I volunteer with the Western North Carolina Alliance and the Sierra Club on the Asheville Beyond Coal campaign. And I'm delighted to be part of this discussion. Thanks for having me.
Great. Good morning. So as you can tell, we have two organizations that have long-term track records on environmental issues and especially clean air, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and the Natural Resources Defense Council. And it's wonderful to have a retired physician on as well because we know so much about the air issue has to do with our health condition. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little bit about clean air and the fact that our country has a law that protects the air that we breathe from pollution. And we know that's so important because that affects our lifestyle and our health and everything. So I'm going to start with Jen. Let's just do a little overview for our listeners about the Clean Air Act and what's going on with that issue and why it's so important for people to be attuned to it right now.
Great. Well, thank you. Yes, the Clean Air Act, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, was really one of the first seminal environmental laws in this country. It was originally passed back in the 1960s and has been amended multiple times over the years to make it stronger and to look out and protect public health with greater and greater regulations and oversight. And it is, you know, it is not an exaggeration to say that because of the Clean Air Act today, we have much cleaner cities, we have much cleaner air quality in general. And that is true in most of the country. It is worth pointing out that the American Lung Association, however, just released their annual State of the Air report. They call it the SOTA report. And unfortunately, it did find that we still have about 40% of the American public living in communities where sometimes the air is not clean enough to breathe, where it doesn't meet some of these basic standards. So, we are fortunate that we have protections in this state and in this country that other places do not, but we cannot just assume that all is well and that we don't need to continue watching and protecting them.
Well, and yeah, and Jen, so much about this discussion is going to be the fact that, you know, we certainly have an employment issue in this country and need jobs, but we have an awful lot of lobbyists in D.C. representing companies, you know, that want to protect their interests and, you know, that they'll argue the opposite side of the Clean Air Act and some of the standards that puts in place. So I hope we'll get into that a little bit as well as, you know, how you balance out the public health and clean air against employers who might, you know, be infringing upon that a little bit. Luis, did you want to weigh in on this at the, you know, early, just give us a little perspective from your organization?
On the jobs issue, I think it's, I mean, this discussion has been happening for a very long time, and I hope that by now people understand that there's really not a choice to be made between environment and economy, that you can have both. You can have a clean environment, clean air, you can have clean water, and that can help generate jobs, that can help stimulate productivity. So there's really no choice to be made between either of them. We can have both of them, and we can structure policies in ways that actually enhance job development, and that's something that we work very hard to do.
Richard, as a retired physician, I know that in this country we've seen an increase in respiratory illnesses, you know, probably cardiovascular disease. How does that relate to air and our air standards?
I'd like to take a very broad view here, because I'm probably the oldest person on the call, and I think the broad view is the best perspective from 30,000 feet and thousands of years is better for me. In 1661, a man named John Evelyn wrote to King Charles in England and said that there is an inconvenience of the air and smoke in London caused by the burning of coal. We now know how coal kills, and it's more than an inconvenience. So when we talk about coal and clean air, we're talking even more than about air quality. We're talking about the dynamics of the planet and how life may thrive or may decline. And right now we're seeing a decline both in our air quality, in our climate stability, and in the water quality, basically due to, in large part, the burning of coal. And the jobs issue is definitely a piece of this, but coal is a, burning coal for heat and burning coal for electricity is a 5 centuries-old technology. And if we are going to make this planet a habitable and livable and thrivable planet, we have to have 21st century and 22nd century technologies to provide our energy. And coal is not one of them. And we are at a critical decision point now. We can transition into an economy based on renewable energy, such as wind power, solar power, and geothermal power, with a strong emphasis on the most efficient of these technologies, or continue our decline by depending on coal and other fossil fuels. So we can create a better economy, but not through keeping promoting coal as a primary source of our power. It's only through the transition to renewable energy sources that the economy will thrive and people will have meaningful work.
Well, let's tell our listeners, I mean, what is, you know, we've had this act in place for 40 years, lots of amendments made to it. You know, we've got, there's a rulemaking process with the Environmental Protection Agency. There have been court cases. Tell us, you know, where is this now? I remember the president talking about clean air, some new standards in his State of the Union address earlier this year. What is the current state of the act, and what's going on that our listeners need to be aware of?
Well, Jean, this is Jen, and thank you. I'm glad you brought that up and kind of brought it back full circle. as you noted, Clean Air Act, we've had it on the books for many years. Something that is newer and occurred back in the year 2007 was that the Supreme Court ruled that carbon pollution, carbon dioxide, which is a main byproduct of burning coal, as Richard just noted, that that is a pollutant that harms human health. And because it impacts and harms human health, it should be regulated under the Clean Air Act. It is considered a pollutant from clean air, even though it is largely invisible. There are still strong and profound human health implications of it. And so, therefore, the EPA and through the EPA, the President of the United States has the authority granted by Congress. This is not a new entity. This is authority to protect human health from pollutants seen and unseen. So 2007, that was a pretty big decision, and that was an important point in recognizing that coal and coal pollution from our dozens and hundreds of coal-fired power plants throughout this region and throughout this country does need to be addressed. That is the authority side of it, if you will. You did mention, and that is correct, the President has spoken multiple times and very eloquently on the moral need, the obligation to act, that this isn't just something we should do, this is something we must do. And in particular, in this year's State of the Union, just a few months ago, he specifically called it out in a unique way. He said, we will respond to the threat of climate change, knowing that the failure to do so would betray our children and future generations. And by that, he was summing up a lot of what we've just spoken over the last few minutes, that coal pollution is not only a threat to human health, but coal-fired pollution, carbon pollution, is one of the many agents that is fueling climate change in this country and around the world. And so the President acknowledges it. He has spoken about it. And in fact, he has the authority through the Clean Air Act and through the Environmental Protection Agency. And so each of us on this panel feels very strongly that it is truly time to move forward, and it is time to do something about this and not just talk about it and agree about it, but move forward.
Well, and what has to happen now for that, for it to move forward?
Well, the main sticking point right now is that a little over a year ago, the Environmental Protection Agency put forward a new standard, a draft standard. And this draft standard, it's often been shortened to just being called the carbon rule, but it is the new source performance standards for new power plants, new coal-fired power plants, well, and gas-fired as well. This was proposed in April of 2012, and this would begin finally, for the first time ever, to actually establish limits on carbon pollution that comes from our stationary generating sources. And this is truly significant, more than 3 million comments were generated and submitted by the American people. That far surpassed by millions. I mean, I think the record before that had been about 1 million comments. Richard or Luis, you may know better, but so 3 million comments were generated in support of having a carbon rule. However, we are now 14, going on 15 months later, and the rule has not been finalized, and that needs to happen. So the President has the authority, and we certainly encourage all listeners to reach out to the President and urge him to cut this carbon pollution and to finalize that carbon rule.
You know, we all know things don't move as quickly in Washington. They seem to move pretty quickly in Raleigh, but not in Washington on these things. I mean, what is cause? Do we have any idea what's, you know, the lag on this, why there's such a delay?
Well, I mean, I will offer a thought and perspective, and then I encourage my co-panelists to do so as well. Again, yes, things do not move quickly. This will be a major new rule, and it will be the first of its kind, if you will. And I think there is always a desire for careful and caution when you are going into new territory. but to put it really plainly and really bluntly, there are very strong opinions on all sides of the issue of pollution, of what causes pollution, and of climate change. And so there are people who, in Congress and around the country, who simply want to obstruct. They just want to delay, they want to hold, and they don't want honest discussions, because once honest discussions and honest data come forward, the path of action becomes very clear. So that is my speculation, that everybody in Washington is just doing the delicate dance and waiting for the right time. But those of us, particularly those of us who live here in the South, where we have an unparalleled amount of carbon dioxide coming out because we are so heavily dependent here in North Carolina and other southeastern states on coal-fired power plants, that every day they delay is a day with more carbon pollution in the air and more impacts to all of us.
Luis, did you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I would say that, obviously, as Jen said, this, for a lot of people, remains a controversial issue, although I believe, and I think most people believe, that the science is not controversial. I also think EPA has been taking its time to make sure they get it right, and I do believe that the draft that they issued is the right approach for new sources. But as it is a politically controversial issue, it has been stalled. Part of the reason that we're using the Clean Air Act to regulate this is because Congress could not get their act together a few years ago, kind of move forward on broader regulations, regulations for all sources of pollution that affect climate change. So EPA, as Jen said, received a court decision from the Supreme Court that they could move forward under the Clean Air Act, and this is kind of the result of that. And quite frankly, I think it's time to move forward. There's kind of this issue has been vetted extensively. It's received more comments than any other issue in history. There's an issue about getting it right, and there's also an issue about just starting to do something about this grave problem to where we are here to encourage EPA to start moving forward, because we do believe that the way they've chosen is a smart one, and it's going to be hugely beneficial, not only for our health, but also for our planet's health and ultimately our well-being. And it would be one that will not impact our economy in anything but a positive way.
You know, Richard, since you self-identified yourself as the oldest person on the panel, and I don't know if that's true or not, do you think that this really, a lot of this, the political part of it has to do with the fact that there's just so much rhetoric around climate change, and it's become such a divisive issue politically that this rule has sort of gotten caught up in that rhetoric?
I think it has gotten caught up in the rhetoric, and this is quite frankly, from the place I sit, a recurring theme in human culture. This carbon rule and the fact that we haven't been able to move on climate change is really about power. And the people in this country and around the world with global corporations control governments. It's quite easily shown that, you know, the powers that be have access to the Congress, the corporate powers have access to Congress in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, and into the executive branch. And it's difficult to go against their will. They're the people that own the big oil companies. They own all the extractive industries, including coal and natural gas. And the money to be made by coal in the ground, by natural gas in the ground and by oil in the ground is what is keeping us in this deadlock situation. Everybody can see that the people want action on climate change. All polls show that. Yet we're not moving. And the people that are going to suffer the most are the poorest among us. It is, we go back to the Old and New Testament, and the theme is recurring. States have little regard for those that they exploit. And so, although the three panelists live in the beautiful mountains of Western North Carolina, they are beautiful because there are no extractive industries here other than timbering. And timbering basically stopped in Western North Carolina in the last century. But right up the road, 2 hours drive from here, 500 mountains have been destroyed because of mountaintop removal coal mining, and they're continuing to be destroyed. Thousands of streams have been destroyed. Poor communities have been depopulated because of the coal industry. And so from my perspective, this is the ultimate moral issue, both because of climate change and the destruction and exploitation of those without power. So companies like Duke Energy, companies like TransCanada, companies like Exxon and Mobil don't want anything to destroy their profit base. They have money in the ground that they want to exploit, and they're doing everything in Washington to slow things down, including putting pressure on the executive branch and the EPA to not make a carbon rule. And when the carbon rule is promulgated, finally, it'll end up in court because these organizations have the money to delay. So from my perspective, it's not a technical or scientific question, and it's not a question of what the people want. It's a question of power.
Yeah, I think it's, the oil and gas industry, it's pretty easy to go back and look and see that they've been heavily subsidized on the federal side for a century. And with that comes campaign contributions that flows to people on both sides of the aisle. And they certainly want to protect that system. And so it's very, even in North Carolina, we've seen with renewable energy, it's hard to have renewable energy take a foothold with a small subsidy because oil and gas have been receiving these huge subsidies for so long, and they want to protect their turf. So on the clean air side, I mean, what can our listeners do to engage in this discussion? There's so much, there have been so many comments. You said there have been more comments on this than any other, rulemaking, in history. What should people be doing right now?
The easiest way to get in there and to speak with the president, quite simply, would be to go to whitehouse.gov, that is the official website of the White House, and contact the president. There is a Contact Us button in the upper right corner, and your listeners could click on it and send an email message to the president and simply say, it's been months since this carbon rule was supposed to be finalized. We support a rule on carbon and would like to see this rule finalized and implemented. The rulemaking process is not complete, but the comment process is complete. So at this point, there is no further opportunity right now to submit comments in support of the rule, but we can certainly reach out to the executive branch. You can also call. There is a White House switchboard number, which is 202-456-1111. And then, like I said, you can contact via an online form on the whitehouse.gov website. I mean, of course, you can also write, you can fax, there are other ways, but those are usually slower. And quite frankly, as both of the panelists with me have pointed out, we really don't have more time for delay. This has been delayed quite long enough and is time to be implemented.
We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back and continue talking about clean air and with our panelists from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, Richard Fireman, who's a retired physician, and the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm Jeannie Bonds, and we'll be back in just a second.
Power 750 WAUG.